What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Happy Thursday on B&E. That means your day, buck-ons and buck-offs. It's a buck-off Thursday. We've been doing it a long, long time on this show, Show of the People. Your day, we always like to say, you know, you're going into the weekend. You just got to get it off your chest. Don't harbor that that buck-off. Let it go. Let somebody have it. 337-3776 is the text line to do so. Who needs one? Obviously, Mike McCarthy, Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, Dak Prescott have been bucked off pretty heavily this morning. For a lot of different reasons, we've bucked on the NFL for divisional playoff weekend, which is coming up, and we're looking forward to it. We'll also get back into some basketball chatter with the Longhorns. Huge win for the Texas women last night, and we saw Vic Schaefer the last couple of weeks kind of really frustrated with his team with some performances that they had, you know, unacceptable level of play, and trying to get, you know, talk about how young they are and having to learn to do it, you know, their way. And, boy, last night on the road at Iowa State, huge victory. We'll see if that can become a pivot point to their season for Vic Schaefer, because at times this year they've looked like a top team, and then they've lost some games where they just didn't bring, you know, Texas Tech coming in here and beating them out physically, and then was a case in point. And, you know, on the men's side, Chris Beard's trying to, you know, find that pivot point to his team's season. And, Zay, is it fair to say we'll talk to Chris Beard tomorrow and you will host the right call tonight at 8 o'clock. I know you'll talk some Texas hoops, but when we say pivot points, I mean, when did it shift? Because right now this feels like this Texas basketball team is kind of muddling along, scuffling along, underachieving in a lot of people's estimation. I don't know where Chris Beard will be on that, but we'll ask him about it tomorrow. Brian Davis of the Statesman was with us earlier, and he talked about how, you know, it's hard to judge, and he's fairer. I mean, it's hard to judge what they did in the non-conference because they didn't play anybody, and the three games that they played good competition, they lost two of them. Gonzaga, the number one team in the country, beat them. Seton Hall beat them, and then they beat Stanford out in Vegas on that neutral site. But, you know, so it's safe to say they weren't battle-tested entering conference, which I think Chris Beard, by design, he wanted this team to build chemistry and build some confidence and continuity. Well, now they're getting battle-tested because they're into the Big 12, which is as rigorous as it gets on a night-by-night basis. And think about this, Zay. They started the conference with the, you know, they played West Virginia, who were missing their leading scorer and two other key guys because of COVID. Then they beat Kansas State when Kansas State was down to seven scholarship players and no head coach. It was a, you know, nice win, but still, you had an advantage in that spot. I know Chris Beard would say that they were missing some guys too, but at the same time, not to that level. So you posted those wins. Outside of those two that were COVID-aided at some level, you kind of scuffled. Your best performance by far was Oklahoma last Tuesday here at the Irwin Center when they really controlled that game from start to finish, Andrew Jones having the big night. Other than that, they've beaten West Virginia and K-State when they had major COVID roster problems, and now they've lost to Oklahoma State and K-State on the return engagement. And as you said, the real meat of the schedule, the grind of this schedule, really doesn't get to its apex until February.
Yeah, it's been a really weird, interesting season for this Horns basketball team, but I think there's some serious problems going on within the team and within their confidence of the players. Like, we could talk about the players missing shots and not finding a key guy or a leading scorer, but if the coaching staff doesn't make it easy for these guys, then it really doesn't matter. And I don't know if they have. I think that when you have a motion type offense with a whole bunch of guys that like the ball in their hands, you need to start making more of an effort to get the ball in their hands to where they could create that's a more comfort for them. You know, I think that players like Andrew Jones, Courtney Ramey, you look at Dylan DeSue, Trey Mitchell, those guys being in and out the lineup in the way fighting for minutes. Like, at this point, Marcus Carr and Timmy Allen, they know they're going to play 30 minutes a game. I feel like they know what's going to go down with that. But the rest of the guys, it's kind of just wondering, you know, what's my role on this team? You could say, yeah, Andrew Jones a scorer, Courtney Ramey's a scorer, but you have a coach that's always emphasizing different things. Like, he's always talking about their defense, which he should. That's the culture. You should be preaching other things. There's more to basketball than just scoring. But it's very hard to get a rhythm and think about my offense when I know that if I make a mistake defensively, I might be pulled out the game. And it's hard to play like that if you're a certain player.
Yeah. And again, this is Chris Beard, a new coach with a brand new roster. He is the first year he's coached any of these players, the whole coaching staff. Obviously, a small number of players have played together, the Andrew Jones, Courtney Ramey, Jace Febres group, Brock Cunningham. But they're also learning a new coach and a new system at the same time and a new coaching staff. And, of course, the seven transfer players. And we'll ask Chris this tomorrow, pretty candidly. Like, will the rotation tighten up? Is this about pushing buttons, finding out who your guys are? Because when you hit this February stretch, and Chris has talked about being the best version of themselves late into February and into March, because they're rotating in 10 guys there right now. I mean, when you're going down all the way to, who's your guy, Lacone?
Ollie Lacone.
Ollie Lacone's getting in the game. When you're going all the way down to that, and you're going to, you're deep into the bench, is that to send a message? And then after the game the other night when they lost to K-State, and they allowed K-State to take the fight to them, which is, another mantra of Chris Beard's. We are the most aggressive team. And then afterwards, Trey Mitchell and Dylan Dessou in that game, who had all the turnovers, 9 of the 20 turnovers at Iowa State came from that front line. Mitchell and Dessou hardly played. I mean, they just didn't play a lot of minutes. Is that a message sent? And then afterwards, when asked about it, Brian Davis actually asked Chris Beard about, the rotation. And he said, look, guys, you have to understand, you have to bring the intensity on every possession, every play, all the time. I need more commitment out of those guys. So I'm kind of calling them out. And so that's what I wonder. We're still in January. Is this the process of figuring everybody out? You don't know what you've got until you're into the battle with these guys, and certainly with a coach and a staff that's not been with any of these guys in these intense moments. You kind of, figure them out. But does, in your mind, is there any thought that this is a tightened up rotation will come as they get closer into February and beyond?
I mean, it should be. I thought that it was weird when he was doing this during the preseason, before conference play, when he was just changing up different lineups all the time, different rotations. Yeah, that's cool and all, but when you get down to where you are now in conference and you're still trying to figure it out because guys haven't been on the floor with each other as much as you like, you think back to, why are you changing up the rotation so much?
Yeah.
It's just... I like Tristan Lacone. I like Avery Benson. Then you look back at what happened with Jalen Tyson, and that's a bit weird to me too. Like, he came here for Beard, so it's just,
and then transferred.
And Chris Beard was talking about how Jalen Tyson would be fighting for minutes this year also. So I really don't know what's going on, but it's definitely troublesome.
Well, and it's not optimal. when I say pivot points, I wonder. This stretch is pivotal. I mean, there's no doubt about that. When you look at their next three games, Oklahoma State this weekend here, then they've got who's the game before Tennessee? They got
TCU
for the first occasion with the Horned Frogs, and then Tennessee in the SEC Big 12 thing with the Rick Barnes return to the Irwin Center.
And Tennessee's good.
They are good, but these are games. This is because then beyond that, you're going to see Baylor twice. In the rest of the year, you're going to see Texas Tech twice. The rest of the year, you're going to see Kansas twice. The rest of the year, you really need to know what you are. And I agree with Zay that, and we can ask Chris Beard this tomorrow. Does he think he has such a deep roster that you can almost play matchups? Like, this is my best lineup for this team, or these are the guys that are going to have some. I don't know. I don't know what the thought process is, team by team, game by game, for Chris Beard. But I do think it needs to become a pretty tight 8-man rotation. The guys you trust the most. And we know Timmy Allen, Marcus Carr are certainly a part of that. Andrew Jones. But
and I get penalizing players for not, I guess, being a part of the scouting report or not doing exactly what this coaching staff wants. There was one play against Kansas State where Timmy Allen was guarding Smith, and they were forcing Smith to the baseline, and there was a pick coming towards the middle, but Timmy Allen was clearly forcing them baseline. It's called the ice, and Dylan Dessou was supposed to be able to help towards baseline. He didn't. Smith scores. You could hear Timmy Allen yell, "Come on, D!" It was a horrible moment for Dylan Dessou, and then he gets pulled right after that. There's the balance that you have with, hey, maybe I shouldn't pull him. Maybe I should let him ride this out, and we'll let him know when he comes to the bench, look, you didn't do this here, but by taking them out, that's just the confidence thing sometimes where, man, I mess up anytime, I'm going to be taken out the game. Sometimes you got to ride with a player just for their confidence and their psyche, and I don't think this coaching staff has done that lately.
Well, that's interesting. And it's, again, it's a It's players and coaches that aren't familiar with one another, right? I mean, you can say what you want about transfer portal players. You scout them, you watch them on film, but you don't know them. You don't know what makes them tick. You don't know their mental mindset. You try to get to know as much of it as you can. And this is where I'll give Chris Beard credit. He has said this from our first visit way back in September, that our biggest challenge is time. We are up against the clock. We're going to be playing teams that have been together for 2 and 3 years. I mean, these super seniors, these teams that are just loaded with veteran players that have played a lot of ball together, been coached by the same coach for a long time. You know, gosh, even in Lubbock, where Mark Adams took over for Chris Beard, you know, Mark Adams knows that roster. He knows those dudes. He recruited those guys what makes them tick. I believe Chris Beard is kind of, and his staff is learning that as they go, and it wasn't a difficult non-conference schedule to test them. And you're right. I still think here in January, they're still kind of experimenting with things and sending messages like you did. If you don't close out on your responsibility, we're going to, you know, sit you down. And, you know, we'll talk to Chris Beard about that tomorrow and the state of this team. I did point out, or I have pointed out, and I don't know if this team has like a, when Chris Beard in 2019 took Texas Tech to the national title game and almost won the title, that team was about 500 in January in the Big 12, if you go back and look at it. I think at the end of January, they finished at 6-4. But they had a 3-game losing streak in there. Then they hit February, and that team took off. I mean, I think they lost one game the rest of the way, all the way into March Madness. Am I predicting that for this team? No. I'm just pointing out that this is a very talented team, and Chris Beard has been here in this spot before where January it's just kind of sliding around. But at the same time, it's concerning. And I know, gosh, I saw a tweet from our friend Jeff Goodman, the college basketball analyst for CBS Sports. He tweeted yesterday that right now, if they're not careful, they're going to be a bubble team, Texas Tech. I mean, Texas, they got to post some victories. I mean, just because they lost, you played those tough games in the non-conference, but you lost two of the three. The Stanford game helps, but right now your best win is Oklahoma. And the other thing Chris Beard told us last Friday when we talked is, he doesn't even look at the standings until the turn, he called it, because you play 18 games in the Big 12. When you get to 9, you kind of look at where you are, and then you know where you got to be. We'll get into it. But that's, they've got to post some victories. They've got to take care of Oklahoma State this weekend, because Oak State's a team that beat them in Stillwater 2 Saturdays ago. You can't get swept, especially by a team that's going to finish probably in the middle to the back end of the Big 12. Very important game coming up on Saturday, and we'll talk to Coach Beard tomorrow, 8:25, here on this program. All right, say we've talked Longhorn football, Gary Patterson, for folks that missed it in the 7 o'clock hour. We also talked to Casey Studdard about it in the 8 o'clock hour, but interested that our friend Chip Brown, who was on the show with us just last Friday, talking about the Gary Patterson role and the hire, penned a story overnight into this morning at Horns 24/7, in which he reported or relayed a story of a conversation he had with Gary Patterson on Tuesday night. And, of course, Gary was at the basketball game when Texas played K-State, wearing that Texas pullover and the Bevo on the chest there. And according to Chip, here's what he wrote. He says, I had a short conversation with Gary Patterson ahead of the basketball game on Tuesday night. And what stuck out is as it pertains to Longhorn football. Chip says Patterson said to him, "I want to be for Sark what Dick Tomey was for Mack Brown." What Dick Tomey was for Mack Brown. Now, you know, if Chip had said, or I had said, "Man, I wish Gary Patterson, if he could be like Dick Tomey, that'd be great." Well, Chip is reporting that he said that to him, that Gary Patterson knows what Dick understands how important Dick Tomey's role was for Mack Brown back in 2004. And it kind of sees himself in that type of role. Well, that's very aware. That's very aware of the situation. But it would also lend you to think that for people who think he's coming in to step on toes and ruffle feathers and have coaches looking over their shoulder. Well, that wasn't Dick Tomey's role. Let's keep clear. Dick Tomey came in and brought energy to the program, brought toughness to the program. And I thought Casey Studdard said it well last hour, because he was here when Dick Tomey got here. Dick Tomey brought a 30-plus-year coaching career where he was the winningest coach all-time at Hawaii, the winningest coach all-time at Arizona. He was famous at the time in 2004 for the Desert Swarm defense, member of the 90s that was so good out at Arizona. And so he brought a lot of credibility And he's in his 60s. He's a tough guy, but he's got a lot of energy. And he brought that, according to Casey, to the program. Greg Robinson, too, coming in at the same time from the Denver Broncos and from the NFL landscape. So interesting and very interesting that Gary Patterson says, according to Chip, I want to be for Sark what Dick Tomey was for Mac Brown. It sounds like, I'm just connecting dots, that he's had many conversations with DeLoss Dodds, because DeLoss Dodds and Gary Patterson are close friends. Of course, Kelsey, his wife, Kelsey Patterson, worked for DeLoss Dodds back when she was a student at the University of Texas and after. And so still a great relationship with the Dodds family and DeLoss. Well, that sounds like something DeLoss Dodds would say. Hey, Gary, what would be great? It's you could come in and do for Sark what Dick Tomey helped with Mac Brown, because DeLoss was here for all that, saw it, was an eyewitness to the change culturally and physically that the program had. And we had some blitzers reference it that, you got to put, if you want to put the T for toughness back in Texas, who better than a guy that's been beating your butt for the last 10 years and knows you as well as anybody, but is also known for that, instilling toughness and tenacity in football teams. That's been a calling card and a staple of Gary Patterson's teams for a long, long time. So if Gary is aware of, what the issue is at Texas and what it was for Mac Brown in 2003 and 2004, and can put himself in the shoes of Dick Tomey, a coach who's been very successful like Coach Tomey was, but out of his job, doesn't have a head coaching job at the time, but really get back to the basics of developing young talent, developing young people, leadership, toughness, all those things. If that's the mindset that Gary Patterson's coming into this with, I can't tell you how important that will be. And it's exactly what Texas needs. There's a lot of talent down there, a lot of good players, but as Gary knows, having played them every year, if you hit them enough, they'll give in. If you hit them often enough, they will give in. And Casey Stutter talked about it last hour, that when he was here and Tomey came in, they really challenged these players. You think you're going hard, you can go harder. You think you're going hard enough or tough enough, you can be tougher. That's my scouting report of you. That's important when a guy when a coach Zay with the pedigree and the resume of Gary Patterson comes in from the outside and starts telling a young person, hey, here's what I saw on tape about you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, with the skins that Gary has on the wall, hell yeah, it's important, and it's somebody that Sark could trust. So Texas fans, quit being petty, quit being, don't try not to be understanding, because Gary's a reason why we're in this situation in the first place. He's going to come to help. So have that in mind when the Horns are winning ball games next year.
Let's hope. Dick Tomey certainly helped when he got here. Texas went on to win back-to-back Rose Bowls. And let's keep in mind, Dick Tomey's only here for 1 year. It was 1 year. And he did served such an important role for Mac Brown. He ended up with a head coaching job again. He was back at San Jose State. Greg Robinson did too. If that's Gary Patterson's plan, that he wants to take a little bit of a break, take a reset to his career, he's only in his early 60s, and see if he can help Texas and be a part of that, be the Dick Tomey. And then that, he parlays that back into another head coaching job down the road. Good for him. That'd be great. But at the same time, the role he's being asked to serve now, I think, is, it's absolutely needed, and I think he's the perfect person for it if his head is right and there's clarity from all sides of what the role entails. All right, we'll take your thoughts there. A lot of good conversation. Texas hoops, Texas football. Get back into the divisional playoffs that are coming up this weekend. Big-time games on tap starting Saturday. We'll preview coming next.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Buck-ons and buck-offs every Thursday here on B&E. And how about a buck-ons, eh? You ever heard of a 19-year-old young golfing phenom named Akshay Bhatia? Akshay Bhatia, Zay?
I have heard about him.
You heard about this dude?
Yeah, supposed to be the next big thing.
Slim Reaper. He's a slim dude. He's got a big, beautiful left-handed swing.
Got the hair.
Hits it a mile. Kind of a prodigy. He's won a bunch of junior tournaments and has skipped college to turn pro. Actually, so intelligent, he graduated high school way early so he could get to the pro ranks and is making his way. But here's what he did. He's 19 years old. Akshay Bhatia, Zay, and folks. So he does what any 19-year-old kid these days does. Saw a pretty girl on Instagram and slid up into her DMs. You know how that goes, eh? You're a married man now, but I'm sure there was a time you were sliding up into DMs.
Oh, yeah. And also a time where I was getting mad rejections by those, too.
The Heisman, getting rejections. So he slid into the DMs of one Presley Schultz. Presley Schultz, and you might imagine what her Instagram account looks like. She's, takes pictures of herself. Because, you know, back in the days, we used to take pictures of things.
Yeah, once upon a time.
Once upon a time. And my mom has like walls of photo albums of things, places we went, things we did. No, it's all of you now, taken by you in a lot of cases. Well, Akshay not only wanted to hook up with Presley, which I don't know if he did or not, probably so, he invited her to be his caddy.
That's who that girl was?
Yes, full on Mac. She doesn't know anything about golf. But invited her to be his caddy, and yesterday he won his first ever Korn Ferry event with Presley Schultz on his bag.
Yo, I saw homegirl walking with him, and I was like, okay, what? I don't know what you're trying to do here, but I see you, my guy. He's doing it.
He did it.
Wow. And
I don't know, can I say he won the tournament with her on his bag? Is that fair? That's what she did. There she is, lugging the sticks. Carrying his bag. Korn Ferry Tour with a tweet. It started with an Instagram DM and a professional golfer's dream. Winner, chicken dinner.
She's rocking the OG caddy fit, too. Like, she didn't deck it out or anything.
Got the ball cap.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Cooter had texted and said, yes, she was on his bag, if you know what I mean. Sure. Well, look, those are jokes write themselves in that. But he doubled down on himself. You know, maybe she gives him confidence. You know, she gives him the mojo to go deep, you know, to take that gamble, take the big shot. And I'm telling you, as someone who does not have a pretty golf swing, that dude's got a pretty golf swing. I mean, I try to have some good tempo, you know, good finish. Keep that takeaway right. But the same, this dude's got a smooth, he's tall and skinny, left-handed, but man, those tall, skinny flat bellies can hit the ball a long way, I can tell you.
I guess it didn't get awkward when he asked for his putter on the green and she handed him his driver.
Hey, you know, she's real pretty, so you live with it. That's okay, Presley. You know, putter, driver, you know, we'll talk putters later. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, no, he won. He's 19, so keep an eye on that. And you may be hearing more of him. And maybe, you know, when Jordan Spieth took the golf world by storm, you know, his caddy, Michael Greller, that became a big story because, remember, Michael was a school teacher, had a full-time job, career, the whole thing. And, you know, Jordan Spieth convinced him to, you know, get on his bag and come believe in him. And obviously it was a very wise financial decision for Michael Greller to get on board with Jordan Spieth when he went on that run of majors. And he's made a lot of money. But that's the golf story of the morning. Presley Burke. No, Schultz, I'm sorry. His name, Akshay Bhatia. Bhatia, so keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I'll definitely be looking up her talents when this show is over.
So let me just say, so for Instagram, my daughter's on Instagram, my kids kind of, so I check on it, but you can just Instagram anybody or message anybody out of the blue?
Yeah, anybody.
Really?
Yeah, anybody that doesn't have their account on private.
On block?
Yeah.
So just, and that's what it's for, right?
Which if you're an influencer, you definitely don't have your profile on private.
Yeah, because you want to make that money. You want to become an influencer that's getting paid. I see how that works. So yeah, just because like obviously to text message someone, you got to know their phone number. And you got to have it. And you got to get those digits, right? That's what it used to be back in the days, when I had no game whatsoever.
Yeah, and on Twitter you could block that off. Like you could take your messaging.
That's
off.
Right. That's right. On Twitter you can block the envelope side where people can send you messages, and you have to be able to follow them, right? But like you can message someone apparently on Instagram that they're not even following. You don't know who you are.
No.
You're Joe Schmo.
Now, it might take you to like a private messaging area on Instagram where you don't see a lot of bots can get you.
Oh, with a bot?
Fake accounts.
Oh, so you're hitting on a robot?
Yeah, that could happen. That could happen.
Well, that's dating today. I actually have a little stat on that, Zay, that goes in line with this story. You know, back in my day. Yeah, that's bad radio. Back in my day, Zay, back in your day too, you know, the term taking it too fast, you know what that meant, right? When you're first date kind of thing. You're already hooking up and that kind of stuff. That's probably a little bit too fast if you really want a long-term relationship.
Yeah, my grandma used to say, ooh, that girl fast. You don't want to talk to her.
That girl fast. Well, a new study by dating.com found that the average person today, the young people of today, all they need is to exchange about 30 messages before they believe comfortable in meeting up in person with that person. It takes 30 messages. And then date on. Is that about right?
Yeah, a lot of the basic questions. What's your favorite color?
Well, because especially on something like Instagram, you can see what they look like, at least what they say they look like, what they're putting out there in their pictures. You know what they kind of look like. They can put descriptions in their bio of who they are, and you can kind of see what they are doing, what they're up to. Seems to me like a lot of these Instagram influencer ladies like to lay around in bikinis a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's their go-to.
it's always
hot, no matter where they're from. They always find a place where it's hot. It's like, oh, how are you in New York right now, but you're on the beach? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, then you talk to them, they're like, well, I'm really busy. Well, it looks like all you do is lay around on a lounge chair and take pictures of yourself. That's what it looks like to me, but, you know, that looks good. But, 30 messages is what it says. And that kind of is now the new, you know, back in the day, it's like at least 3 or 4 dates before there's even thought of anything frisky, you know what I'm saying? At least. Sometimes longer, depends on who you're talking to. But in this case, you know, it's just 30 messages and you're up and in there. Hey, and look, when you meet someone in person, there's usually an immediate attraction, right? There's one of those, you know, there's something to that. But you don't get that on the messages and looking at pictures and those kind of things. But we'll keep an eye on the golfer. You know what else today is, Zay, on this Thursday morning? National Disc Jockey Day. National Disc Jockey Day, and commonly known as a DJ, radio DJ. Turns out the 20th of January is National DJ Day because one of the original disc jockeys died 57 years ago on January the 20th, a guy named Alan Freed, who helped popularize the term rock and roll in the 50s on the radio. So, and sometimes, I'm sure, Zay, with what you do and what I do, I've been doing it a long time, people like your relatives will reference you. Are you still a disc jockey? Are you still a DJ? I'm like, no, Aunt Noreen, no, I'm not. I'm not a D. I don't play discs. We don't play music. But that's just like anybody on the radio becomes a DJ. Are you still a DJ? No, I'm not a DJ. You ever been a DJ, Zay? You ever spun the hits like the Buck did one time? We were playing sport music here on the sports station.
No, I haven't. But that's a dream of mine.
Ooh,
to crash a wedding, become the DJ, rock the party. Oh, yeah.
You spin good tunes. I will tell you that. And we get a lot of people giving you dap on the text line for the bumper music you play, the creativity, the variety, how it falls in line with the day or with the topic we're having. And then I was at your wedding. There were some good tunes spinning.
We were rocking it.
Yeah.
We were rocking. The Soul Train line was good. Yeah. We got down on the wedding day last Sunday.
Got down. And you did the gritty, too, which is a popular dance on there.
No, I didn't do the gritty. Trey Elling did the stiff gritty.
Oh, no. Stiff gritty?
It wasn't no Justin Jefferson.
It's a gritty, but he was a little stiff while doing it because he doesn't have a lot of...
A tad bit stiff.
Not a lot of fluidity to Trey Elling. That's surprising to me. And I'm not going to... Mine would be much stiffer than that. I promise you if I'm going to do the gritty. But yeah, so Zay is a good DJ. But National DJ, Jay, you would call us, but Zay, sports personalities, radio personalities, hosts, show hosts. I mean, but no, not disc jockeys. Disc jockeys... play music. Used to play records, then they played discs. I'm sure there was a time where they played 8 tracks. And when I was first getting in radio in the middle 90s, I worked at a radio station. We had a cluster of a sports station, but also a bunch of music stations. And I remember I worked there 102.3 in Austin. Remember when it was classic Z102?
Yeah, I do.
I worked there then. I did the sports forum in the morning. I was working at the AM sports station at the time. It was really my first job in radio. But on Sunday nights, I had to work overnights, and you would put in these the cassettes, the big and you'd line them up. You'd have to have your song playlist built, and from song to song with little in between. You would play those things, man. There was a whole wall, like a massive wall of these what are they called 8-track. I'm not even 8-track. What's the name of these things? And so the songs, you had to match it with the playlist. You put it in there. Yeah, that was back in the night. Wasn't that long ago. But now it's all digital. It's all on computer these days, as they say. But yeah, National Disc Jockeys Day. I did that for a short amount of time was happy to get out of it and get into what we do now, talking sports, getting you ready for the best NFL weekend of the year, divisional playoff weekend. We'll also get you ready for a busy night in sports coming up. We'll also pass the baton off and get you ready for Light the Tower with Craig and Jeff and Snoop. That's coming back here on B&E.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
B&E on the horn. It's Buck Off Thursday. Been fun this morning. Appreciate Casey Studdard jumping in, talking about Gary Patterson and the direction of the Texas football program. Brian Davis, Austin American Statesman, was with us as well, talking Texas hoops and football. And way back in the first hour, Ari Temkin joined us from the Cowboys Radio Network. One of the busier guys out there. Good stuff on Dallas and the future and where they're headed. And the frustration of what happened on Sunday. If you missed any part of the show, you can always go back and listen to it at hornfm.com on our Horn app, which is so simple to use. And if you're holing up the next couple days because it's cold outside and you're going to be working from home and or at your office trying to stay warm, you know, fire it up on that smart speaker. Just tell Siri to fire up the Horn in Austin, hornfm.com. And you got us with you all the way through because we're not done. Our show's done here at the top of the hour, but that hands it off right off to Light the Tower, Craig and Jeff and Snoop. Then it's Shirts and Skins through the midday, RBKD this afternoon with Rod and Kevin. And, of course, Longhorn Weekly with Chris Beard tonight, talking Texas basketball, looking into the weekend. And then after that, it's Isaiah Collier with The Right Call. 8 o'clock tonight, talking all things hoops. And safe to say, Zay, you got a lot to talk about because last night was a crazy night in the NBA. You had all three Texas teams winning. By the way, Houston beat Utah. I was looking at Utah. They're not very good. What happened to the Jazz? I thought they were a contender.
I think they still are. This last week, they've lost 5 out of 6. But during that stint, Rudy Gobert's missed about 4 games with COVID, which is ironic because he was the first one with COVID when the season went
off
south.
The tracks. Yeah,
exactly. And now Donovan Mitchell, he didn't play last night either. So that goes to show you that all these players are pros at the end of the day. And if you don't have one of your top guys, then we could see what we saw happen last night. And that was a Rockets dub.
Yeah, a rare road win for Houston. More win of any kind for them. But yeah, that happened. You also had Nikola Jokic, the MVP, with a 49-point triple-double. And, you know, talk about MVP, 49 points, 14 boards, and his 10th assist was a sweet dish out to the game for the game-winning three-pointer that he distributed. And that guy does it all. That's why he won the MVP, and Denver got the win. 50 points for Joel Embiid in 27 minutes, which was cray-cray. So they'll have all that tonight. Also the college hoops. It's The Right Call, 8 to 9 tonight. Any special guests tonight, Zay, or just free-flowing?
Oh, no, with the way Texas basketball's been, your boy's going dolo tonight. I got a lot to say. A
lot to say about Texas hoops and the frustrations with the, you know, the inconsistencies on offense, the, you know, lineups, the minutes, how they're being distributed. I'm sure all that will be getting done. Somebody asked about Bucky. Bucky will be back on Monday. Bucky's, as we talked about a lot yesterday, taking his first time off of the new year. He's off to Pennsylvania. Should be in the air about right now, making the trip to Chicago and then jumping over to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where he will spend the next few days visiting his family. He'll be back on Monday. All right, Zay, one of the things we're going to give folks homework for tonight into tomorrow, because one of the things we'll try to do tomorrow, and I want you to think about this too, because one of the things, when I get to this point of the playoffs, one thing I always do is I try to rank the best coaches and quarterbacks remaining, right? And you kind of get a little power seeding, power ranking going. Well, so we'll rank the best coaches. I mean, I think Andy Reid's going to be at the top for most everybody, right? Andy Reid will be sitting there. He's got a Super Bowl. He's been to many. Chiefs back and back again. And, you know, we talk about coaches who have won a Super Bowl. Of the remaining coaches, only Andy Reid has one. Sean McVay has been, Bruce Arians, I should say. Bruce Arians won one last year with Tom Brady, so he picked one up. So there's two coaches with Super Bowl championships as a head coach. Sean McVay with the Rams and Kyle Shanahan with the 49ers have taken the team to the Super Bowl. You know, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay has gotten close, back-to-back NFC championship games. And Zay, when you look at the overall record, body of work and record of Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, I mean, first year as a head coach, 3 losses. Second year, 3 losses. This year, up until that Detroit game that they lost where they were arresting everybody, 3 losses. He wins. And guess who he took over for? Mike McCarthy, by the way. And it was a significant improvement for the Green Bay Packers from what Mike McCarthy was delivering at that point. But Matt LaFleur has been a rock star, but he hasn't been able to get over the hump of the NFC Championship game. And that becomes the challenge of at Lambeau Field with Matt LaFleur. He'll have a head-to-head with another young offensive genius in Kyle Shanahan. That'll be a fun game on Saturday. And then, you know, Mike Vrabel and, the Bengals coach, Zach Taylor, the former Nebraska quarterback. You know, I think it's fair to say if we rank the top eight coaches remaining, one's Andy Reid, two's, eight's Zach Taylor, right?
Yeah.
And you build in between. We'll have some fun with that. We'll also rank the quarterbacks left, and that's always a challenge. The best two quarterbacks might be playing in the last game at this point. You're playing best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Not resumes, not all time. That's a worthy debate. Because is it Josh Allen? Is it Patrick Mahomes? Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it Tom Brady? And then, you know, where's Joe Burrow fit in that? I don't know. That's fun debate. I mean, I think Jimmy Garoppolo and Ryan Tannehill are going to be at the bottom of that for most everybody. But, goes a long way this time of year. This is why these games are so great. You got to have the head coach and the schemes and the game plan and the play calling and the game management in the most critical moments. And then you've got to have a great quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also ironic that LaFleur, Sean McVay, and Kyle Shanahan were all on the same roster with the Washington Redskins in 2014.
That's crazy. Good point, Zay. And Dallas Cowboy fans, not to leave on a sour note, are sitting here wondering, do we have a great coach? Do we have a great quarterback? I don't think so. So, well, dang it. That becomes a problem. And plus, we're the most penalized team in football. And we're not very smart as a football team. But Mike McCarthy did double down on that play call, final play, doubled down, said it was the right play, it was on the play sheet. On the play sheet. So we ran it. Yeah, that's how the Cowboys season ends. Zay, great stuff today. Appreciate all the guests and the conversation. We'll do it again tomorrow. More great guests and conversation in the NFL Divisional Playoff weekend. We'll recap tonight. Zay will have some thoughts coming off of his show tonight about Texas basketball. And Chris Beard. We know is one of our guests tomorrow at 8:25, talking Texas basketball ahead of the game with Iowa State on Saturday. That's tomorrow, 8:25, so be with us then. Coming next, Light the Tower, Shirts and Skins, RBKD, busy Thursday on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and always at hornfm.com.